Welcome to When Mothers Lead, a podcast created by Motherful, a soulful grassroots collective of single mothers. I'm Heidi.
And I'm Lisa.
And we will discuss how you can be a part of this movement and what the world will look like when mothers lead.
I see the mothers marching. I hear the mothers singing. I feel the mothers grieving. I see the mothers leading.
Welcome everyone to When Mothers Lead, and today we are talking to a very beloved guest, one of the collective members of Motherful here in Columbus, and she is a single mom of two, also a powerful poet, among other beautiful things, and her name is Stevie Knighton, and we're also known as Dear Ms. Stevie on all platforms. So welcome, Stevie. Thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I feel honored to be here, truly. Truly, truly. I have a great deal of respect and admiration for what you do.
Thank you. Ditto, same right back at you.
Thank
you. So we just wanted to bring on some moms throughout our podcast journey who we know are really... you know, making a difference in the community. So many moms are, and we've loved having you perform with us and be with us in the collective. And so maybe we can just start out by you sharing about yourself, a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah, who's Stevie?
Sure. This is a question. So in my day job, I interview people right now. I've been in recruiting for a long time, but right now I interview pilots for a private aviation company, and I have to ask them to tell me about themselves all the time, and you would think that it would be such an easy question, and now I'm on the other side and I'm like, oh gosh, where do I come from? So it all started back in 1984. No,
where do you begin?
Right, so I've been writing since I was 9, and I've been performing since I was 16. I am a Columbus native. Nice. I went to East High School, so mm-hmm. I like to say, you know, the East Side raised me and made me. I went to school at Fisk University, went to Philly pursuing graduate school, and actually met my now ex-husband. Got pregnant with my first.
Where were you
studying? I got a degree in English and mass communications, and I thought I was going to be like the next Oprah for some time.
Yeah.
And then I determined I wanted to specifically make a difference in the community. Yeah. I was like, I'm going to, you know, be a journalist or, you know, I don't know, but I really wanted to make a difference. And I started mm-hmm. looking more into nonprofit work.
So we wanted to ask you, Stevie, what, because we're talking about mothers who lead and the leadership of mothers, we wanted to know how motherhood has shaped your leadership and mm-hmm. how your leadership has shaped your motherhood, and also how that kind of ties into your art.
Absolutely. So the word that comes to mind is courage. Really, in terms of, because it takes courage, I think, to lead. I think oftentimes women are not chosen, selected, brought up in this society to understand what leadership looks like and have the ability to shape that according to who they are and their experience. I think that oftentimes, particularly like in corporate or, you know, industry, we are required to adapt to the way things are. And motherhood, you know, forces you to adapt your life to what your family needs. Single motherhood and above all else, you know, definitely makes you become creative in terms of how you pursue success, or the well-being or the, you know, caretaking of your family. And so I bring motherhood with me wherever I go. I bring motherhood to the office. I bring motherhood, you know, to my creative work. I talk about my children. I talk about the experiences of motherhood, but I often talk about it in my creative work, from a more like holistic experience of mothers. Oftentimes motherhood is so focused on the child, as it should be, right? It's focused on our kids. They're the people that make us moms. And you know, we're taking care of them, but there is a special club. and there is an experience that comes with actually being in that role, that I think is especially, inspiring. And so oftentimes my, poetry, my creativity will be focused on women and focused on the women who do not have the privilege, or did not have the privilege, of being able to speak up and have a platform and dare to say the thing, whatever that thing is, or the women who don't have the privilege of bringing their motherhood, and they are trying to adapt their lives and their work around their kids and often have to make really unfair sacrifices. So when I feel like you have the privilege and the ability to do so, that will ultimately impact, even a little bit, the way that, you know, industry thinks about leadership and welcoming mothers and parents in general into the workforce. I think it's like a duty. Like I bring my motherhood to work with me so that the other folks, the other younger folks, the other women, the other moms, who seek me out. Honestly, I have a few people at work that seek me out, just to be able to talk to me about, you know, what they're juggling. And I'm like, I understand. And I have moms that I reach out to, like, listen, they're 13 and 14. I don't know how you got them to 20 and 21, because I'm struggling. So, I mean, no leader is really gets where they are without that community. So, I mean, leading to me really means you're in touch and supporting your community. It has to be from that place, for sure.
Love that. Yeah. So speaking of poetry, did you bring any to share with us today?
I did. There was one I liked, because this one, like I said, is mom focused, meaning it's not focused like on, because I could say all kinds of things about my children. You know what I mean? Like, just they're funny. Yeah. They're amazing. So I've written little things about them, kind of for them, but a lot of my writing in terms of motherhood is really about the experience of motherhood and other mothers, who may not have, like I said, been able to say anything. They've just had to just do the work in silence. And so I actually had a poem called The Silent Generation. Because I thought about, I just think we're not as different. As much as we have all this technological, you know, advantages, and we live in the quote unquote modern age, I think our news proves to us that we are not as far above the basic human condition, for better or worse, as we think we are. And the beauty of living in this time, though, is that we are able to connect with each other, and based on those greater experiences that we do share as humans, as women, as moms. So this is my poem, and it's called The Silent Generation, and it's for every woman who did not or does not have the voice to speak their truth. They all wanted to write, all of them that whisper wisdoms beyond my years, pouring their pains into me, moving me to tears. They've been visiting me my whole life, whispering their wonders in my ears. They had business plans and dreams, hopes and loves and deep joy they kept quiet within, because when was it safe to laugh out loud, full teeth grin, head back, tears rolling down ebony carved cheeks, but in the presence of other sisters, the whisperers to me. Where was it safe to write down sermons and speeches and prayers and swears and spells and recipes, but in between canisters and on lace-covered dressers, the altars we made to ourselves when we weren't allowed to know ourselves and kept diaries to show ourselves, if only ourselves, that we were real. The whisperers visiting me in my dreams, meeting me in our special place at a table in the middle of the now and hereafter, transcending time like a good word does, like good words do. The writings, the ideas, the brilliance, the pain, the rage is not all my own. It's me giving voice to the whisperers, shouting from the rooftops. They were writers, all of them. They were writers too. That's the silent generation.
Yes. Hey. Oh my God. Yes. Yeah, that was beautiful. Thank you. I think I remember hearing that poem. I think you shared it on your socials. Mm-hmm. Is that, did you share it? Maybe a performance of it?
And, I did. Super yeah. Powerful.
Yeah, because it made me think about, like, you know, I really want to do a memoir primarily for my children and my, mm-hmm. you know, my grandchildren, my descendants, because I just want to tell my story from yes. my, like me tell my story, you know? Yeah. And it really is because of that. I mean, exactly what you said in that poem, like my grandmother's, you know, you hear so much about men in history, you know, yes. what's called his story, you know, but you don't, like our mothers were so busy. Our grandmothers were so busy, like just doing the mm-hmm. things, you know, yeah, and maybe they weren't even able, literate, you know, potentially mm-hmm. depending. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like that is so important that we tell our stories, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It is. It is everybody. Important.
So thank you for.
That's super important.
Thank you for giving voice to that and inspiring us and all the moms and people listening. I also wanted to ask you about your writing practice, because I'm also a writer and a poet, and so, you know, it's like choosing between the things that we love to do, right? Yes. And the things that we have to do.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about your writing process, like your practice, what that looks like how the hell mm-hmm. do you find space, time, energy, like to even hang out with the muse? Like when, where, how? Tell us.
Oh goodness. Cause I'm like astonished, like, oh dang, when do I find the time? I have to think about that for myself. honestly, I am a neurodivergent, or you know, neurospicy. And people who are quote unquote mm-hmm. gifted, and folks who have a touch of the tisms and maybe a little ADHD or any type of anxiety or anything that would impact your executive function, it makes doing many, many, many mm-hmm. tasks incredibly difficult, unless it's something that is like almost pouring out of you. And there have been many times where I've not been able to write or to do much of anything else but survive in my life. Like just me and the kids mm-hmm. ate, fed is best. It was McDonald's, but we ate, now we're all going to bed. Like, you know, it straight up, there's no beautiful like routine or anything that right. I wish I could give to anybody. It comes back to that word courage
right.
there, because yeah. I think nobody talks about, like, when it comes to production, especially as a creative, it is messy. It is not this, I mean, for some, maybe mm-hmm. it is. For some, it might be this beautiful practice. Yeah. And then some might like listen to this, like my right. fellow poets might be like, girl, you need to get a practice and you need to get it together. And I'm open to that feedback. But as it stands, the goal for me is to just get it out. The goal is to let it pour out of me, because if I don't, I dream about it. They'll show up in my sleep. And if I don't wake up, they're gone usually when I wake up. So it's going to come regardless, because that is the gift. And so my goal then is to grow enough to be able to be more available to the gift. And that's just where I start. And there's times where I'm called upon to do things. And that's when my talent and experience shows up, since I've been writing since I was 9 doing this. So practice, practice, practice. So if somebody says, hey, Stevie, can you write a poem about tacos? I got you. I probably already have one because I love tacos. So that's easy. But the gift, what makes the poems that are transcendent, the ones that that actually have the impact that any artist would hope that their art has, are the ones where the gift was uninhibited. And so I say, any writer, any person with any kind of gift, find the place, find the tool to allow you to let the gift come pouring out of you. Because then it doesn't feel like effort. It doesn't feel like the work that our brains, especially as a neurospicy person, avoids. So when I look at it like work, when I start seeing it that way, it becomes harder to do. When I just look at it like it's going to come out, you know, like I'm just letting it out, it becomes cathartic, and it becomes a gift, not just for others, but also for myself. So maybe in a nutshell, I would just say, you know, be open to and stay in the flow of the gift.
The play. Yes. Yes. I love that so much. I'm taking notes over here for real.
I wanted to ask you, I wanted to ask you about your mom.
Oh, yay.
And tell us some stories about your mom and how she shaped you into the person you are.
Oh, absolutely. I love this. Nobody gives me the opportunity to talk about my mama. So I've been blessed. I have, I can't talk about my mom without also really quick mentioning my stepmom, Leah, and my grandmother, Lois West, who really did have a hand in raising me. So I was mothered by several women, but and a lot because I grew up as a child of divorce. So I would go visit my dad in the summer, and I have only uncles and a grandfather. My grandmother, my paternal grandmother, had passed before I could remember. So when I was out there, I was really like, it was me and a bunch of guys. And Leah was my dad's longtime girlfriend before they were married. And so I would, and they didn't live together or anything like when they were dating at first. And so I would oftentimes escape to her house to be with her and my sister, Portia, and then my little brother that came along later. So they were my respite, you know? And then my grandmother, when I was home, you know, throughout the school year, was there when my mom was working. And my mom worked a lot as a single mom. So, but the beauty of my mom, just if I talk about her, we're very close still. And she was just absolutely my hero. Just absolutely, she could do no wrong. Butter wouldn't melt in her mouth. She told me, I believe, like, you know, my mom, I think, jokingly to amuse herself, told me like she was a virgin, like when I was a kid, like, you know, like, no, mommy didn't do anything. And I believed her right up. Of course my mom didn't do anything.
Squeaky clean,
right? Squeaky clean, a saint. And so the ways that she was one of those women when I was growing up as her only daughter, she did not want me to worry about being a mom. She didn't want me to worry about getting married or any of that. And I was very much the little girl, like, I'm going to be a princess and marry a prince and have 10 children. And, you know, and my mom's like, no, my mom was a police officer in a former life. And before she had children, she raised her nieces and nephews along with my grandmother. So she was very independent anyway, very much. She named me Stevie because she knew she wanted an S name, but she said she had a vision that I would be like a doctor and it would be a white coat ceremony, or I would discover the cure for something and there'd be this big conference and all these white dudes in white coats, and they would announce my name, Dr. Stevie Griffin, and people, Griffin is my maiden name, and they would be expecting some man to walk out, and she said, then out would step this beautiful black woman. And it would shock everybody. I was like, okay. And I hated my name. Oh, I hated my name for a long time. But it really does work for me now. And I kind of see her vision. I'm like, I did my BA, Mom. I don't know if I'm going to ever get a MD, BDS, PhD. I don't know if that's in my future. But it definitely does still surprise people when they meet me or they see me. But uh-huh. She was very much that. She had these plans for me. Mm-hmm. She wanted me to, she never wanted my gender. And she was always extremely open. I was so blessed that I did not grow up in a household that was, we believed in God, but we were allowed to explore and we believed in the full expansion. We didn't believe that, you know, we were better than, or that if you had a certain sexuality or gender or any of those things was wrong. I was fully brought up to be accepting and loving of everyone, which is a blessing. But she never wanted me to believe that anything would stop me or keep me from accomplishing anything. And after I had children, I wrote her, she would tell you this, I wrote her this letter because our relationship was strained at one point, as close as we were, it was strained. And I remember it's cause, and this was the last straw, she had walked into my house. I know everybody can feel this. She had walked into my house. I had two kids, like under two, right? Because they're close in age. I was pregnant at my first son's first birthday party. Mm-hmm. Crazy. So she walked in. I had just served him lunch. Now, mind you, I had cleaned the house, but the one baby had wandered into his room and like flipped his shoes all over. Like he had a little crate of shoes, flipped that over, just stuff. You know, I'm in the middle of transitioning from lunch to like chill out time with the kids and I'm home. She walks in there, looks at the house, looks at me, and she's just like,
yeah,
when are you going back to work full time? Because you're not even good at this. And I was like,
oh,
I mean, never expected my mom to say that. Felt so bad. But she was just, I think she had walked in the middle of something and thought I was struggling. And of course, was just saying it without. So I wrote her this letter. And I talked about how she will always be my mother, how much I admired her. And I also talked about how I will always be her child. And then I said, but I am no longer a child. And I need you to respect me and my home. And I need you to respect me as a mom and as an adult woman. I need our relationship to change. And my mom, being the classy, wonderful woman that she is, who has definitely made me the mom that I am, completely accepted it and embraced it and was grateful to me for sharing that with her, and then chose to allow our relationship to grow and mature. And absolutely, she's the one that has taught me how to let my children lead in certain ways and really adapt to them in order to parent them in a way that they need to be parented, because every person is different, is unique. So I'm only one person, but she has shown me how to adopt to adopt the kind of motherhood that Hayden needs, my oldest, and the kind of motherhood that Ari needs, my youngest, because they're very different people. So without her, I don't think I would have had the knowledge to do that. And then obviously her decision to allow our relationship to blossom, and it truly has. We have it's a different relationship, but it's so good. She's still one of my favorite people in the world. I think I'm grateful because I wouldn't be here without her support either. So it's a privilege to be her daughter. Truly, truly it is. She's a wonderful, brilliant, wonderful woman who works at Target And so if y'all ever targeted or meet any of these workers at Target, you're going to have to see me because they could be my mama and it's somebody's mama probably. Yeah. So y'all be nice to retail workers because they're good people. And she works her tail off. And my goal before this all world is over, if I can make enough money to retire her and put her somewhere, that's my goal for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's so sweet.
Oh, we feel the love. We feel the love. And thanks to your mom for raising such a beautiful woman.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And mother artist. Beautiful.
And woman.
So to just kind of wrap up our podcast, mm-hmm. we have a question that we ask everybody. And I'm just going to set the scene for you because, you know, we talk about matriarchy now. Mm-hmm. We talk about mothers leading in this world. And we want to ask our guests, when mothers lead, what will the world look like? Like, if you can take a second to envision when mothers lead, some of the things we've said, like, is when mothers lead, like, there'll be no more war. When the mothers lead, all the children will be safe, you know?
All the children will be fed.
Yes.
Yes. So what's your vision for when
the child support will be paid?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I said this a while ago when I was working. Was it where I was working at GCAC? I feel like it was an interview with them. And I talked about when you bring like Black women into a room, then you bring the community in with you. And I have found that to be the same thing for when you bring a mother into a room, you bring the community with you. And this is for better or worse in some cases, of course, depending on what your politics are. But I believe the vast majority of women, particularly women in any kind of marginalized, you know, community in our greater society, have a firsthand understanding of the necessity to be creative in getting your needs and your children's needs met. And then beyond the differences that we have, I think motherhood and being a woman or a person that identifies as a woman, being in touch with that feminism, I really do truly believe there is a different energy, a different vibe, a different understanding of the world that does come with being a woman, especially being a mom. So when you consider all of that, I think it would be impossible for women to be in leadership and then also have the poverty, homelessness, greed, imbalance, injustice that we see. I think it's instinctual, even when women are mothers, not necessarily by birth, but by heart. I think it's instinctual to lend your power to the greater good and recognize that you truly do receive personal reward when you make the best decisions for everyone, because you are included in that everyone. And I think motherhood in particular makes that very clear. You have to learn how to feed yourself so that you can feed your baby. You have to learn, you know, how to show up when you don't feel like showing up, because it benefits the needs of something and someone beyond yourself. So you can't help but to take that forward with you. I think that the world, I think there was definitely a time in the world and in many indigenous communities where women were in leadership and that was the norm. And I think that we saw a lot of change the world over in a negative way when certain politics, ideologies, religions, et cetera, took foothold and convinced a few people that they were better and they should be in charge and solely them. And I just don't believe that was the ultimate goal of why people are here, whether we believe in a greater deity or not. The goal would be to be able to love one another and see each other's humanity. And who better to do that than someone who carries humanity literally within their body or their heart? So that's hot. Yeah.
Body.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. That's such a great answer.
Thank you.
Yeah. So we'll be looking for you to step into leadership even more in your life. And mm-hmm. one of our goals is to support moms in becoming bigger leaders, and so we'll hope to see you again.
Absolutely.
With that, and thank you so much for coming on, Stevie. We love you so much.
I love you.
Hope we get to see you soon. And yeah. By the time this podcast is released, hopefully yours will also be out. Where can people find you?
Right now, I am Dear Miss Stevie everywhere. So I'm on Facebook, TikTok. My Wig Off Wednesday videos are all over TikTok. You can still find my writing at dearstevie.wordpress.com. That my blog and everything is still up there, including my 100 days of writing project that I think is mm-hmm. aging beautifully. So definitely take a read if you like. And then yeah. I am currently yeah. writing, and I'm hoping, and so I'm telling people so they can hold me accountable too. But I'm almost done with my book. It'll be called The Gift of the Graceful Goodbye, and I'm hoping to release that in the spring. So, aww. Yeah, and the podcast is also yes. called Dear Miss Stevie. So if you look up Dear Miss Stevie, all the Dear Miss Stevie things should be available to you. DearMsStevie.
And that's S-T.
Yeah.
Yay. All right. Thank you so much, Stevie.
Thank you.
Stevie Knighton.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Thank you. I love you guys.
Bye-bye.
I see the mothers marching. I hear the mothers singing. I feel the mothers grieving. I see the mothers leading. I hear the mothers shouting. I see the mothers dancing. I feel the mothers healing. I see the mothers.